हरि ओम सहनाववतु सहनौ भुनक्तु सह वीर्यं करवावहै तेजस्विनावधीतमस्तु मा विद्विषावहै ॐ शान्ति शान्ति शान्तिः ॐ जय श्रीकृष्ण चैतन्य प्रभु नित्यानन्द श्रीहद्वैत गदाधर श्रीवासरि गौरभक्तवृन्द हरे कृष्ण 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 हरे 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 राम हरे राम 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 हरे हरे
Okay, starting Chaitanya Charitamrita, Adi Lila, Part 1. So in here then we have the preface, introduction, Chapter 1 of the Spiritual Masters, Chapter 2, Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, the Supreme Personality of Godhead, Chapter 3, the External Reasons for the Appearance of Lord Chaitanya, Chapter 4, the Confidential Reasons for the Appearance of Lord Chaitanya, right? Because you have the confidential and the external. So the external is the forms in which these are manifest. So it doesn't mean that they're not important. It just means that they're the ones that you're going to see outside. And the background of that's what you're going to see inside. Right? Like, just like Krishna creates the material world because of the point that he wants to give the living entities an opportunity to come back to Godhead. Right? That's the internal reason. But externally reason, you see, is because they've turned away from Krishna, so then they have desires other than serving Krishna, so they're given an opportunity to try to engage themselves in those activities. Does that make sense? Okay, so this preface is... This is Prabhupada's. Okay, 68. Preface. There's no difference between the teachings of Lord Chaitanya presented here and the teachings of Lord Krishna in the Bhagavad Gita. The teachings of Lord Chaitanya are practical demonstrations of Lord Krishna's teachings, right? Because you're going to have to apply what Krishna says. And so then how the Gaudiya Vaishnava applies them, that's then the teachings of Lord Chaitanya. Right? Lord Krishna's ultimate instruction in the Bhagavad Gita is that everyone should surrender unto him, Lord Krishna. Krishna promises to take immediate charge of such a surrendered soul. The Lord, the Supreme Personality of Godhead, is already in charge of the maintenance of this creation by virtue of plenary expansion, Kiradaksha Vishnu. But this maintenance is not direct. Right? So Krishna is pointing out that one who surrenders, he directly takes responsibility for. But in the material world, he's maintaining every living entity, but it's not directly. Right? It's through his external energies. The Lord says that he takes... However, when the Lord says that he takes charge of his pure devotee, he actually takes direct charge. A pure devotee is a soul who is forever surrendered to the Lord, just as a child is surrendered to his parents or an animal to its master. In the surrendering process, one should, 1, accept things favorable for discharging devotional service, 2, reject things unfavorable, 3, always believe firmly in the Lord's protection, 4, feel exclusively dependent on the mercy of the Lord, 5, to have no interest separate from the interest of the Lord, and 6, always feel oneself meek and humble. Footnote 1. The 6 divisions of surrender are the acceptance of those things favorable to devotional service, the rejection of unfavorable things, the conviction that Krishna will give protection, the acceptance of the Lord as one's guardian or master, full surrender and humility. Chaitanya Charitamrita, Madhurila 22.100. So these are the symptoms when Krishna says surrender to him. This is the moves. These are the elements that then one can look at in practice. Right, so this is the fun part of devotional services. Even though we can say the feelings, the moods of this are, you can't identify them or define them, but in Chaitanya Charitamrita and Nectar of Devotion, they define them. Right? So that's why it's a science, because you can actually define. So it goes beyond just the ideas that, oh, someone feels like this or someone feels like that. It's a matter of those feelings are defined on how they're working, how they're dealing, and what application they have. Okay. Yes.
People sometimes think that because it's defined, it loses its taste.
If it's defined, it loses its taste. But then, one is, I mean, the attitude in which it's defined, of course, will add something to it. But let us say you're talking about something to eat, right? Something's been cooked, and then you break it down to the flavors that are there and this and how this is balanced and that. For how does that reduce the taste of the item? Right, something that's very nicely cooked, and I break down how there's a balance between this and that and the techniques that were used and all these things. Why does that change the taste? Yeah. So the whole point is it doesn't have to. That's why in the spiritual world, they know the science, and by the science, then that's where the taste comes. Because it's not based on knowledge. It's based on appreciating the variety of things that are happening. Otherwise, we'll think it's just one thing's going on. But what's going on? You know, Krishna is interacting with the gopis. Okay, and so then in this case, Radharani is being upset. Right? She's being contrary. So then being contrary, then one will say, okay, so that's going on. But then the science of that contrary is that's just feminine nature. So when one thing's said, the opposite has to be mentioned. So then that means it's just a manifestation of the feminine nature. So then that starts to bring flavor. Right? And then, why is she upset? Right? You know, because, look at it. So it's just a matter of she's upset, but why is she upset? She mentions in the prema, see what's it? The box. The box of prema.
Prema
Samput. Prema Samput. That the reason that she is upset is because Krishna's happiness with her, because she's a Sarup Shakti, is going to be greater than if he's with one of her expansions. Right? He's unlimited, she's unlimited. So when he's with her, she'll get the greatest happiness. But if he's with another rival gopi, then it's only going to be a part of her potency. Therefore, he's going to get less pleasure. You understand? So unless it's the aspect of the Maharas and they're doing that, but we see even establishing that, he has to establish that he's dancing with Radharani in the middle. Right? As long as each gopi is vying for who's the best, Krishna's not happy because Radharani's the best. So when they see themselves in the order of how they come to Krishna, then Krishna's happy. Right? So she's upset that Krishna's off with another gopi. Right? So we're looking at it from just the point of that sense of possession, but it's the sense of possession out of affection that he won't get as much pleasure. But why is he there? It's because he said that as you surrender, he'll reciprocate. Right? So therefore, since they surrendered, he has to reciprocate. But she's upset that him following that, he's going to end up being less happy than if he was with her group. You understand? So knowing the science, why does that lessen the taste? You understand? Like that. I mean, there is also an attitude in how it's presented that can also just, but that's the attitude, that's not the science. But if one says, oh, knowledge reduces the taste, then it's a matter of, but is one seeing the context? Is the knowledge personal? Impersonal knowledge, of course, reduces taste. The personal knowledge, why that should reduce the taste? Right? What's gossip about? It's knowledge. Right? Does that reduce taste? No. Right? So that's the whole point, is there's not a problem with knowledge if it's personal. The Lord demands that one surrender unto Him by following these six guidelines. But the unintelligent so-called scholars of the world misunderstand these demands and urge the general mass of people to reject them. Footnote 2. They often say that such demand for surrender is a symptom of oppressive patriarchy, the root of everything evil. There's only one problem with this patriarchy concept, is that Krishna's not white. Right? The reality, however, is that surrendering to the Lord is the soul's best interest. Right? Does that make sense? Yeah. So, that's why Krishna saves, because it's the nature, the soul is the servant of Krishna. It's their inherent nature. They're part of Krishna. And Krishna's accepting that, and so therefore working in cooperation with him, why they won't be happy. Right? At the conclusion of the ninth chapter of the Bhagavad Gita, Lord Krishna directly orders, always think of me, become my devotee, worship me alone, and offer obeisances unto me alone. End quote. By so doing, the Lord says, one is sure to go to him in his transcendental abode. Why? Why would you go? Because Krishna is always thinking of the devotees. Right? He is always serving his devotees. He is always only taking the devotees, and they're important. And he's always doing things and somehow or another connected to the devotees. So by him saying these things means then he's asking the devotees to do the same thing he is. And if you're doing the same thing he is, that means you have a relationship. Right? There has to be something common to be a relationship. Right? So here's the whole point, is how Krishna thinks, how he acts, how he deals with the devotee. He's simply asking that from the devotees. Then you can act in that way. Otherwise, if there's you have this aspect, and if it has majesty, it sets a distinction. So then it puts one in Vaikuntha. But if it's the aspect of following the Brajbasis, it doesn't do that. And so it has more depth. But the scholarly demons misguide the masses of people by directing them to surrender not to the personality of Godhead, but rather to the impersonal, unmanifested, eternal, unborn truth. Because there's the idea that the eternal, this aspect, is the higher. Because that's what we're used to. Because when you go from here, it's personal. Then you go up and there's the element of detachment in that. It starts to become more impersonal. Right? So then the idea is when you cross beyond into the spiritual world, then it'll be purely impersonal. But what's not understood is that it's a reflection. So it may be the highest here, but in a reflection, that means it's the lowest there. And the personal here, which gives the most trouble, that's going to be the one that gives the greatest happiness. You know? That's how it's going to work. So they always misdirect, because in their intelligence, that's all the more they can perceive. Because only through devotion, then one will appreciate. The impersonalist Mayavadi philosophers do not accept that the ultimate aspect of the absolute truth is the Supreme Personality of Godhead. One desires to understand the sun as it is, one must first face the sunshine, then the sun globe, and then, if one is able to enter into that globe, one may come face to face with the predominating deity of the sun. Due to a poor fund of knowledge, the Mayavadi philosophers cannot go beyond the Brahman effulgence, which may be compared to the sunshine. So they don't even know about the sun globe. Right? Or at best, they'll identify, as we were seeing in the Tattva Sandarbha, they're simply identifying that Brahman covered by knowledge, material knowledge, then becomes Ishwara. So they'll take it that much. But they don't know that behind that is the original personality of Godhead. So they can't see these things. They can't tell how the Supreme Lord is a person. And so this aspect of that Krishna never becomes controlled by material knowledge. So their concept of Ishwara being mundane doesn't exist, because he's transcendental. So they can't see that he's transcendental, his incarnations are transcendental, and the Brahman is transcendental. They get the Brahman is transcendental, but they can't see how, therefore, then the material nature is coming from Brahman, and that the living entities, then by connecting to him, can be situated on that personal platform. They can't see how, by taking the material energy, connecting to Krishna, you can be Krishna conscious. You come to the highest level of self-realization. They can't see that. Because they're separating the energy of the Lord from the Lord. Does that make sense? The Upanishads confirm that one has to penetrate the dazzling effulgence of Brahman before one can see the real face of the personality of Godhead. So you have to go beyond the impersonal conception to understand the Lord. So you have that faith. By associating with devotees, you gain that faith. By gaining that faith, then you're able to appreciate. Krishna reveals. Lord Chaitanya therefore teaches direct worship of Lord Krishna, who appeared as the foster child of the king of Braja. He also teaches that the place known as Vrindavan is as good as Lord Krishna, because Lord Krishna, being the absolute truth, therefore there is no difference between him and his name, qualities, form, pastime, entourage, and paraphernalia. That is the absolute nature of the personality of Godhead. Right? So it's all him, though there's a difference. You can tell the difference. Right? Because there's him, there's his Dham. They're non-different. They're transcendental. They're identical. But at the same time, you can tell the difference that this is Krishna and this is the Vrindavan forest. Right? Does that make sense? That's the Achintya Bheda Bheda Tattva. So the point is being transcendental, then relating to Krishna and anything connected to him, you can situate yourself on the transcendental platform. That is the absolute nature of the personality of Godhead. Lord Chaitanya also teaches that the highest mode of worship and the highest perfectional stage is the method practiced by the damsels of Braja. These damsels, gopis or cowherd girls, simply love Krishna without any motive for material or spiritual gain. So of the modes of remembering the Lord and being absorbed in the Lord and everything connected to the Lord, then the mode used by, practiced by the gopis of that full surrender, that's the highest. But it's because of the full surrender. So. Lord Chaitanya also teaches that Srimad Bhagavatam is the spotless narration of transcendental knowledge, and that the highest goal in human life is to develop unalloyed love for Krishna, the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Right? So as a position, that method, that identity, that method is the best. Then the Srimad Bhagavatam is the authority for that. And developing unalloyed love for Krishna, that's the ultimate goal. Right? So very clear, Lord Chaitanya makes this. What we'll see is that this also will come up when it gives the external and internal reasons. It'll all be based on just on these things, like Sambandha, Abhideya, and Prayojana. It's still not going to go beyond that. So there'll be the external in Sambandha, the external in Abhideya, the external in Prayojana. There'll be the internal in Sambandha, the internal in Abhideya, the internal in Prayojana. Lord Chaitanya's teachings are identical to those given by Lord Kapila, the original propounder of Shankhya Yoga, the Shankhya system of philosophy. Right? So Prabhupada said that the Bhagavad Gita and this Kapila Gita are the same, and also the Uddhava Gita. And then he said that the Krishna is the the Krishna's Bhagavad Gita and Lord Chaitanya's teaching are the same. Right? And now he's saying Lord Chaitanya's and the Shankya system of Lord Kapila are the same. So it's all one teaching, just bringing out different aspects. But it's one teaching. That's what makes it so simple, is that there's one teaching, but we come at it from so many different angles just so that we'll be absorbed. Just so that we'll somehow or another catch it. This authorized system of yoga teaches meditation on the transcendental form of the Lord. There is no question of meditating on something void or impersonal. When one can meditate on the transcendental form of Lord Vishnu, even without practicing involved sitting postures, such meditation is called perfect samadhi. Right? So the samadhi, yes.
Are you reading the preface?
Yes.
Is this setting the tone for the...
Yes, yes. Yeah. So this, he just took, that means the devotee who put together the guide, he just took the preface as it is and put it here. I even think the introduction as it is here. Like that. And then we're just commenting as we go through. Then when we get into the main body, then it'll be things from Srila Prabhupada. And this one is just all from Srila Prabhupada. None of the other acharyas have given anything, because Srila Prabhupada already quotes them. Like that. So it's very, yeah. Okay. So, sounds familiar.
Yeah.
You're thinking, I've heard this before. Yeah. Okay, so that means without sitting in the postures, if you're meditating on Krishna, absorbing, that's perfect meditation. It doesn't require the mechanical practices of the Ashtanga Yoga to come to this position. So Shankhya Yoga means with the 24 elements, which everything is comprised of, you can see Krishna in all of that. That means you can be meditating on Krishna looking at your, you know, your pot or, you know, anything. You know what I'm saying? That's the whole thing, is that it doesn't matter. Whatever it is, you can see Krishna because he's what makes. He's the potness of the pot. Right? We're talking about the one in the kitchen. Right? Yeah, okay. Just to make sure. On the basis of... This kind of meditation is perfect samadhi is confirmed at the end of the sixth chapter of the Bhagavad Gita, where Lord Krishna says that of all yogis, the greatest is the one who constantly thinks of the Lord within the core of his heart with love and devotion. Right? So this is actually the point, is that if you're absorbed in the Lord with love and devotion, then that establishes you in Krishna consciousness. The Ashtanga Yoga system is simply for those on the bodily platform to a way to, through the body, since the consciousness is in the body, a way that you can manipulate the body that will be useful for helping you focus on the Lord. Right? So because it has more technical things, seemingly, it's not that it's a higher form. So we take it that technical is higher, but it's not. It's the aspect of that surrender to Krishna. That's the highest. Does that make sense? So, that's the whole point why the gopis are superior, because they simply just think of Krishna out of affection. That makes them the highest yogis, higher than all the great saints and sages and all that. They're in Shantaras. They appreciate. They meditate on Krishna always. But their meditation goes even deeper. It's more intense. On the basis of the Shankhya philosophy of Achinta Bheda Veda Tattva, which maintains that the Supreme Lord is simultaneously one with and different from His creation, Lord Chaitanya taught that the most practical way for the mass of people to practice Shankhya Yoga meditation is simply to chant the holy name of the Lord. He taught that the holy name of the Lord is the sound incarnation of the Lord, and since the Lord is the absolute whole, there's no difference between His holy name and His transcendental form. Thus, by chanting the holy name of the Lord, one can directly associate with the Supreme Lord by sound vibration. As one practices chanting this sound vibration, one passes through three stages of development: the offensive stage, the clearing stage, and the transcendental stage. In the offensive stage of chanting, one may desire all kinds of material happiness. But in the second stage, one becomes clear of all material contamination. When one is situated on the transcendental stage, one attains the most coveted position, the stage of loving God. Lord Chaitanya taught that this is the highest stage of perfection for human beings, right? So, as has been mentioned, then from the platform of bhava, then you can get prema, right? Rupa Goswami is explaining that. But the point of sadhana bhakti is to establish you in bhava. Right? Because it's not that sadhana will establish you in prema. No, sadhana can bring you to the platform of bhava. And then from bhava, that will bring you to prema. Right? So this process here is by the offensive chanting, but the point is you're connected to Krishna. You will be being purified. Right? Yes?
Can we equate bhava sadhana with raganuga?
You can equate bhava sadhana with raganuga, yes. Like that. For us specifically. Others, they'll bring up there's an aspect of rag to it because they like to do it. But it won't be the same as what we're talking about. Because there it's being guided by the rules. But they like the taste of following those rules. So they follow the path of rules. Not because of the rules, because they have a taste for the rules. But still, that won't be called rag. Right? So, rag, then you can equate with bhava. Rag can start to show something before, because it's bhava that extends down to the earlier processes. Right? So, in a very minor form, then the aspect of Shraddha, Sadhu Sangha, Bhajana Kriya, these things, because we're happy doing them. We get some taste from them. Right? So, but it's when it comes to the platform of Ruchi, then you start seeing the actual form of Bhava, though it's small, so it's only called Ruchi. It gets a little bigger, it's called the Shakti. And only when it comes to the ecstasy, that constant ecstasy, then it's called Bhava. But it's the same thing. This means you're going to bring someone to Bhava through the process of Bhava. You can't use something else. It says bhakti, you can only get bhakti from bhakti. It's only bhakti that can give you bhakti. So that means even this earlier state, even the offense of chanting, is still within the realm of bhakti. Because it's devotion to Krishna, it has that intent. But it may have so many material desires, it's just one is overwhelmed. But there is that connection to Krishna. So one will advance. Does that make sense? You know, Prabhupada says that when you've taken too much milk, then you might get a bad stomach, so you take yogurt, which is milk, to cure it. There isn't something else. So the same way, there is no other process than chanting the holy name. So all these other things, you can use them, you know, to support the holy name. But they can't replace, they won't function without the holy name. The karma, the jnana, the yoga, without the holy name, is not effective in elevating one in devotion. So it doesn't matter how good you are at these, it doesn't mean you'll be good at devotion. Like sometimes really, really good yogis or really, you know, top intellectuals or those who are very much absorbed and very expert in material success, many times they have very great problem taking up devotional service. Right? Because of that surrender. So it's about the devotion to Krishna. So if there's a little spark of that gained from the association of devotees, that can then be cultivated and developed, you know, take you to the next level. So, those desires are there. They're not the problem. Right? So that's why if the focus is always on developing love for Krishna, and then you're being careful about them, about the anarthas, but if the focus is on developing that attraction to Krishna by chanting, then you'll see one will advance very quickly. If one is simply think, I have to control these anarthas, that will be very difficult. Because we're very small, the anarthas are very big. Right? But Krishna's bigger. So we surrender to Krishna, then we can overcome the anarthas. Does this make sense? It's very important. Like we were saying, that Bhaktivedanta Thakur points out, there's two approaches to following the rules and regulations. Right? One focuses on not breaking the rules. The other one focuses on following the rules. Right? But here, the rules are for developing love for Krishna. So the more we keep that in focus, then whatever is our approach to sadhana bhakti, there won't be a problem. Right. It will be dynamic, yes.
Can we say that this is the same as always remember Krishna, never forget?
Yes. The rules that yes. Are... yes. Yeah. It means always remember, they're looking more, and that never forget means that breaking the rules, then you forget. So yes. So they're both there, but you see, one's primary. You know, it's just like chanting Hare Krishna. That's the primary. Avoiding breaking the four regular, practicing the four regular principles, that's supportive of chanting. Otherwise, you see, smartas and everybody who follows very strictly the Vedic culture, you know, cultivating in the mode of goodness, follows the four regular principles. It's just standard. It's not something that Prabhupada and Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur made up. It's right there in Manu. So, even the king is recommended to be following these things. When one is situated... Oh, okay. Yoga practice is essentially meant for controlling the senses. The central controlling factor of all the senses is the mind. Therefore, one first has to practice controlling the mind by engaging in Krishna consciousness. Right? So you see the yoga process is just nicely explained here. So the asans, it's just giving yourself a place to focus. Like if you're doing an asan, and it's not so easy, where is the mind going to be? It's thinking of the asa. It'd be absorbed in the body at that point. So it's not thinking of something else. You're not thinking of the business, you're not thinking of sense gratification, you're not thinking of anything else. So that's the practice. You're bringing it from all over the universe to down to the body. Then from the body, then they work on the life airs, they start to do that, so it's a higher thing. Then they bring it to pulling in the sense of it like this. They take it up to where you're meditating on the Lord. So since the point is you control the senses, the mind controls the senses, then being Krishna conscious controls the mind. So the gopis, therefore, are the highest yogis. Because they're just absorbed in Krishna. So they're higher yogis than these others. Like we see, Vishwamitra is a big yogi. But when Menaka comes along, he's not such a great yogi. Right? But Haridas Thakur, then Maya Devi herself comes, and he still is just chanting and all that. In fact, then she wants to take initiation from him. Right? So that's the whole point, is that when you're absorbed in Krishna, that controls the mind, the mind's controlling the senses, so the devotee is the greatest yogi. So that's why people ask, you know, we practice yoga. We're yoga teachers.
So why is it so hard to surrender Krishna?
The basically is, it comes down this, it comes this way, was it? We have this aspect. Okay, we're accepting things favorable and rejecting things unfavorable. So that's not generally so much the problem. And then we get to the next three. Always firmly believe in the Lord's protection and feel exclusively dependent on the mercy of the Lord. That's generally where the problem starts. Because we're thinking is that no, other things will be important. You know, the body is important, the home is important, money is important, relationships, influence, whatever is what we specifically feel is important to us, and that, you know, creates our identity, creates our... So when we start to see, you know, through this Shankhya, that the money, what does money do? It's, you know, it comes in so many different forms. Nowadays, it's just numbers on the computer, right? There's nothing to grab, right? But it has that power of obtaining things. So why is that consistent there? No matter what it is, if it's a gold coin, or it's a piece of paper, or it's, you know, it's a check, or it's on the internet, but it has that same power. So that's Krishna. That potency is Krishna. So what we're looking for in money, and that by getting things, that gets the security, that potency of security is Krishna. He's the potency of money. He's the potency of the home, the family, position, you know, whatever it is that is there. That, all those things, being Krishna, then we can see is by surrendering to Krishna, then whatever I'm looking for, that security, you know, Krishna says gain and safety, then that's going to be here, right? If you can't place it. Always protection and the mercy of the Lord. So it's the gain and safety. Then we shift that gain and safety to Krishna. Then the external forms we're using then simply become, instead of being distractions from serving Krishna, they simply become mediums we use for serving Krishna. Right? So then, therefore, we have money, and we use it for doing service to Krishna, and taking care of details in that service. You know, the family then becomes, as part of this, that it's all just, these are the individuals that you interact with in your service to Krishna. And so then, it's no distraction. But there's the idea that these other religious processes, you know, like economics or politics or... social interaction, or these, they're going to give something important, and then bhakti is something separate. But when we understand that the reason, it means nice interaction with people is nice, we feel comfortable. That's because Krishna, in the spiritual world, with his devotees, is always interacting nicely, and the devotees interact nicely. So, because of that, then that's why here in the material world, even though people aren't Krishna conscious, the rule is you should interact nicely. So everything that's of value here in the material world is of value because of its relationship to being useful as supportive of bhakti, as a medium for bhakti. And then those are the ones that are recommended in scriptures. When you go away from what's recommended, it starts to get distorted, but the principle is the same. So the nice thing about the Vedic culture is that the forms that are used are the same as of the spiritual world. So that the form is the same, and that mood is this, you know, the purpose is the same, and how Krishna. Well, if it's distorted into something that's not, it's still, the principle remains the same, though the form is not. So as we get purified, then we may adjust. You know, it's just like someone likes, let's say, foods that are not so nice. But then as they get purified, then they start to less appreciate, you know, things that are not nice. So then it's just a matter, it basically comes down to that element of that being, having that faith, that bhakti includes everything. And that means all the actions. So generally what comes up is the point is that, okay, that's nice, but what about my practical life? Okay, bhakti's, but we're generally taking bhakti as only the direct. The chanting, the reading, associating with devotees. But the point is also the indirect is also the forms used in bhakti. So therefore family, money, position, authority, all these things are also, even though they're not direct like the holy name, these are things to be used in Krishna's service. And so when we see that's that fourth verse of the Chaturshloki, that directly and indirectly you should see everything connected to him. So when you do that faith, then there isn't something separate from bhakti. See, because otherwise we say, okay, bhakti is I'm in the temple, that's bhakti. Outside the temple is my practical life. But then the point is after a while you see, no, the whole life is bhakti. There isn't something separate from that. Right? And so then everything becomes connected to Krishna. You know, like Bhaktivinoda Thakur, he sees his house, is that he's just the guardian. It's Krishna's house, he's the guardian. So he says he's just sitting at the door like the dog, you know, seeing that it's protected. If someone comes along to give trouble, he barks or bites them. But it's Krishna's house, that's why he's doing it. But before that stage, we're taking care of the house because it's our house. But then as it develops, no, it's not our house, it's Krishna's house. Because the houseness of the house is Krishna. Why it gives shelter, why I feel comfortable is because of Krishna. So therefore that surrender to Krishna then comes very natural. So that's why you'll see the external form doesn't change. The Pandavas, they don't have to change their position. Right, they're emperors of the world. They don't have to change and go to the forest like Arjuna in the Gita. That's his opinion. Is that, oh, okay, if it's spiritual life, then I'll give all this up, go to the forest. But Krishna points out, no, it's at your position you engage in Krishna's service. Is that that? So that faith comes from association. So if you associate with those who are best as those who are having that understanding, or, I mean, let's say that realization, if not those who have the understanding, at least those who appreciate that understanding will gain something. And then we can always advance.
Because when you explain, it sounds so easy.
Yes, because it is that easy. The problem is we make it difficult. You know, that's the fun part. Is we make it more difficult than it needs to be. But that's the beauty of the devotional process, is that it even accommodates the difficulty we create. That's what's so perfect about bhakti, is even we create all these problems, then there's rules for those problems we've created. You know? And it's just like, two kings, then they don't get along. They should get along. They don't get along. Then they're going to be war. There's still rules on how war is taken about, and then how you can be God conscious at war. You know, so that's the fun part. Is that there's always rules that are there. Krishna's given just so it works perfectly. Because then Krishna comes, you see, and he takes part in all these mundane things, seemingly mundane things, that we do. He comes, he gets married, you know, 16,108, like this. He goes to war, you know, there's all kinds of intrigue, you know, with the Shamantaka jewel and all these different things. He's killing the demons, like that. But it's all connected to Krishna. It's all connected with prema. So then there's no problem. So from, you know, things like that that are more formal like that, or even dancing with the gopis, he's not just doing anything, right? You know, it's not that he watched Pulp Fiction to pick up a few moves like that. You know, it means the Natya Shastra is based on how Krishna dances. All right? No? You know, so that's how it functions. It always works that way. So that's the thing is, whatever is there in the way of knowledge, the Vedic knowledge, that's all knowledge that Krishna uses. Yeah? It means all the sattvic, those things, you know, like a Kali worshiper and that's a perversion, right? It's a distortion. But in Kali worship, you have a deity, right? You're offering the same kind of items we offer. 16 items are still offered to that deity, right? You're following a shastra to worship that deity. You have a guru teaching you how to worship that deity. You have regulation on it. So that, the principles are exactly the same. It's just distorted. Instead of Krishna, it's as the Bhagavatam says, a very, what do you call it? Ghastly form of the demigods. Right? That makes sense? You know, Bengalis make Kali look very nice. Like that. Because they, you know, she's Ma, so they make her look good. Then the Shastra, she'll be a little more scary. You know? Does that make sense? You know, she's like, if you're out on the battlefield and you have, you know, you're out on the battlefield, right? That. And suddenly out comes this lady, you know, with no clothes on, with a big thing that she's cutting off people's head, and you're next. It's not pleasant. It's ghastly. Right? But they'll make it because it's their deity, so they'll make her look very pleasant. You know, always smiling and nice and stuff like that. Does that work? Yeah? Okay. So, ooh. The gross activities of the mind are expressed through the external senses, either for the acquisition of knowledge or for the functioning of the senses in accordance with the will, right? So, in other words, the gross activities of the mind are expressed through the senses for the purpose of karma and jnana, right? For the acquisition of knowledge, right, the jnana, or functioning of the senses in accordance with the will, karma, right? Just that's the whole wonderfulness of Prabhupada. He'll say, it means if he always says karma, gyan, karma, gyan, then one, it becomes, we're familiar with it, but at the same time, it gets repetitive. But here you see is that how he'll use the words, he will give different explanations from different angles that we start to catch a broader range, because otherwise karma may mean only one thing to us. But he broadens it and makes it very practical. So that's the thing is, he's talking technical things, but in a very pleasant, accessible way. That's the uniqueness. That's his mastery. Right? That's why he's the founder Acharya. Right? It means if you read the Acharyas on their own, straight, without knowing Prabhupada's teachings, you may or may not understand them. But when you understand what Prabhupada's saying, then read what they say, then it makes sense. That's the meaning of the founder Acharya. Right? So it makes sense. The founder Acharya doesn't mean the one who started the society. Founder Acharya means the one who, through whose instructions, the instructions of the Sampradaya are understood. Right? Because some people will say, oh no, but he's not the senior most and all. That doesn't matter. It's through his instructions you'll understand what all the other Acharyas are meaning. That's founder Acharya. Right? Means in that he has his message, he has his mission, he has his institution. But that's not how he's the founder. He's the founder because his teachings, by understanding them, you know what the other Acharyas are meaning. Otherwise, sometimes, you know, devotees will say, oh, but Vishwanath says this, and Baladev says that, and Jiva says this, and it's all contradictory. That means because you're approaching them without the founder Acharya. With the founder, you won't find that contradiction. You understand? Because it's not about who's senior most, because if you look at it, there's Ramanujacharya and Yamunacharya. So Yamunacharya is his senior, So that we say Ramanujacharya is the founder of Acharya in that line, in the Sri line. What does it mean? By his instructions, you can understand what Yamanacharya is saying. Or what the Yalwars are saying. The Yalwars are superior to both of them. Right? So it's very important to understand what founder Acharya means. It's not just he's a great personality. He is the personality by which you can understand all the great personalities. Does that make sense? Yeah. The subtle activities of the mind are thinking, feeling, and willing, which are carried out according to one's consciousness, either polluted or clear. And so the mind's going to do this, thinking, feeling, willing. Thinking, feeling, willing is connected to Krishna. Your Krishna conscious is connected with the mundane, then we're not Krishna conscious. If one's mind is fixed on Krishna, his name, qualities, form, pastimes, entourage, and paraphernalia, all one's activities, both subtle and gross, become favorable. How did you say the subtle in French?
Subtil.
Subtil. So this must be a French word. Yes. And just we've dropped the B because it was too hard to say. Yeah. The Bhagavad Gita's process of purifying consciousness is the process of fixing one's mind on Krishna by talking of his transcendental activities. Cleansing his temple, going to his temple, seeing the beautiful transcendental form of the Lord nicely decorated, hearing his transcendental glories, tasting food offered to him, associating with his devotees, smelling the flowers and tulsi leaves offered to him, engaging in activities for the Lord's interest, becoming angry at those who are malicious towards the devotees, etc. Right? So, we see is that it's such a nice process, a devotional process. But we're not used to it, that transcendental can be so nice. Right? It's just like medicine. You know, if it doesn't taste bad, it can't be good for you. Right? So, like, remember once this, at our temple, they used to make brahmastra. You've heard of brahmastra? Mm-hmm. Yeah. You know, you take all kinds of things that are hot, ginger and pepper and sometimes chilies and everything, and, you know, throw them into the pot and boil it up like that, and if you're not about to choke drinking it, then, you know, the brahmacharya, that's not brahmastra. You know, like that. But, you know, and it makes you hot and that, and it sweats out the fever. And so they used to make that at the temple. When, you know, when the boys would get sick or something, then someone goes down and makes a brahmastra, right? You know, and then it's like, yeah. So then the fun part was this, but they'd only make it when someone was sick. Then we traveled, we went for, I think, the San Francisco Ratha Yatra, went down for the L.A. Ratha Yatra, and somehow or another kept going till we got to San Diego, like that. Fortunately, we stopped there, otherwise we would have ended up in Tijuana. But we stopped there. And in the morning, and this is, you know, Southern California winter, right? You know, so it's not that cold, right? And so they had brahmastra there. And so, whatever, from the traveling friends, so I got a cup and I drank it. And I was wondering, this is like some pleasant tea. I'm thinking, this is not going to do anything. But the amazing thing is it did. Mm-hmm. Because it was all the right things in the right proportion, and it tasted nice, and it didn't kill you. Right? You know? And it worked. So that's the thing, we're so used to this concept that if it's not bad and rough and nasty and tough, it can't be good. Or, you know, unless it's really that practical and, you know, like this, then it's not good. But no, it's just this simple, wonderful, nice stuff. So when we have the faith that this is what it is, then Krishna consciousness just becomes like that. Right? That's why you see is that there's some difference in those devotees from the 60s. Because this is all they did. They didn't know that there was anything else. Because it hadn't expanded out. So they just took these direct activities. And so that was just that. Nice, you know, kirtan meant you just sang. You didn't have to do some fancy dancing or this or that or other things like that. They were just absorbed. Right? So it's that simple. You know, so when Prabhupada says, chanting, dancing, taking prasad, that is our process, he literally means that. Because everything else is just arrangements so that we can chant, dance, and take mishar. That's the process. So. No one can bring the activities of the mind and senses to a stop, but one can purify these activities through a change in consciousness. Right? So that's what we remember, is that there was the question, I think Devahuti asked the question to Kapila Muni, that how do we stop the mind from engaging in all this connection with the senses? Because it's going off and doing all these things. And that. And then Kapila Muni makes the point, is you're not going to stop the mind from going following the senses. What you can do is, by purifying the consciousness, then it's where the senses are engaged. So that's the point, is the impersonalism, we try to stop the mind. Or we try to, you know, how you say, there's a... can't remember the word, I think it starts with a C. It means about controlling the senses. Curbing, but it's even a more harsh term. It may not be so used these days. But it means that you're very strongly controlling the senses. When actually, that's not the process. It means you can try doing, if that works for you, do it. But the point is it's engaging them in something positive that controls the senses. You know, that's the whole thing. Yeah. This change is indicated in the Bhagavad Gita 239. Wow, that was a good one. The dyslexia took 239 and put 329. Yeah, okay. Where Krishna tells Arjuna of the knowledge of yoga, whereby one can work without fruitive results, right? You're doing activities that seem fruitive, but you're not doing it to get that result for yourself. You're doing it to get the result for Krishna. So therefore, that is knowledge of yoga, right? O son of Prita, when you act in such knowledge, you can free yourself from the bondage of works. A human being is sometimes restricted in sense gratification due to certain circumstances, such as disease. But such prescriptions are for the less intelligent. Without knowing the actual process by which the mind and senses can be controlled, less intelligent men may try to stop the mind and senses by force. But ultimately they give in to them and are carried away by the waves of sense gratification. Right? So then you're trying to engage the mind in Krishna consciousness. That's what corrects everything. Does that make sense? You know, it's just like if one likes to eat so much, then you eat prasad. You know, you like to see nice things, see the deities. You like to hear nice things, hear the kirtan. So the senses are engaged. You don't have to stop the senses. Right? The eight principles of Shankhya Yoga, observing the regulative principles, following the rules, practicing the various sitting postures, performing breathing exercises, withdrawing one's senses from the sense objects, etc., are meant for those who are too much engrossed in the bodily conception of life. The intelligent man situated in Krishna consciousness does not try to forcibly stop his senses from acting. Rather, he engages his senses in the service of Krishna. No one can stop a child from playing by leaving him inactive. Rather, the child can be stopped from engaging in nonsense by being engaged in superior activities. It's just like, I remember seeing once in the temple, he was giving class in downstairs. You know, and in the back of the class, you have the book table, right? And it's shelves, but it's all glass, and you can see all the things there. And so a lot of times, the Matajis with babies and that sit back there, you know, so they're there and they can move. So Mataji's sitting there, and the child is, you know, looking around, and then turns around and sees something in on the other side of the glass, and it starts banging on the glass. I've seen this happen twice. So one mother then, the baby, like that, she catches the child's attention and then points at something, you know, something colorful or something, and oh, like this. And then the child looks and that's done. They just change what they're engaging. So you just, it's not by inactivity. Well, I saw another mother, then she's there yelling at the child, trying to get him to stop and this and that, holding the hand, the child's crying, and she had to leave. Right? Because she was trying to stop it rather than turn it into something else. So that's what's being recommended. You don't have to stop it. You just transform it into something connected to Krishna. Does that make sense?
Mm-hmm.
And so, yeah. Similarly, the forceful restraint of sense activities by the eight principles of yoga is recommended for inferior men. Yeah, maybe don't use this at the yoga studio. Superior men, being engaged in the superior activities of Krishna consciousness, naturally retire from the inferior activities of material existence, right? So the superior and inferior is not based on so much the activity and this and that, it's based on the level of consciousness. So anybody can be superior by engaging in Krishna consciousness. Does that make sense? Right? You know, it's just like we're sitting here in class. So what are we doing? We're establishing ourselves, yama and niyama, right? If you want to hear the class, you have to be here. So that means you have to not be here, right? Then you situate yourself in asana. You situate yourself somewhere and sit in such a way that you can listen to the class. Does that make sense? So one might sit in one position, one may be changing positions, but the point is it's so you can listen to the class. You understand? So the elements of these principles of yoga are being engaged by the devotee. It's just it doesn't take on that formality that yoga does, so therefore then we notice, oh, this is something. You know? And this is what they're saying, the inferior position, the consciousness, then they'll take it that here no one's doing yoga. But actually everyone here is doing yoga. The ones in the yoga studio, who knows whether they're doing yoga? You know what I'm saying? Like that. Okay. In this way, Lord Chaitanya teaches the science of Krishna consciousness. That science is absolute. Dry mental speculators try to restrain themselves from material attachment. But it is generally found that the mind is too strong to be controlled and that it drags them down to sensual activities. A person in Krishna consciousness does not run this risk, right? Because they're taking the senses engaging in Krishna's service. So what's the problem? Right? One therefore has to engage one's mind and senses in Krishna conscious activities. And Lord Chaitanya teaches one how to do this in practice. So that's the niceness of the Chaitanya Charitamrita. Because now you'll see how Lord Chaitanya and his associates practice this yoga, this bhakti yoga. Before accepting sannyas, the renounced order, Lord Chaitanya was known as Vishvambhara. The word Vishvambhara refers to one who maintains the entire universe and who leads all living beings. This maintainer and leader appeared as Lord Sri Krishna Chaitanya to give humanity these sublime teachings. Right? Lord Chaitanya is the ideal teacher of life's prime necessities. He is the most munificent bestower of love of Krishna. He is the complete reservoir of all mercies and good fortune, right? So that's what we'll see is coming up as Lord Chaitanya is explaining his different reasons for coming. So Vishrambhara is that aspect of him cultivating and maintaining the devotees and cultivating their devotional service, right? As Krishna, or Krishna Chaitanya, then that's a matter of attracting one to Krishna, right? Somebody says that's the preaching mission. Then you have, having come to that, then the cultivation is Vishvambhara. Right? Then there's the taste of Krishna consciousness. Does that make sense? So therefore, Jiva Doya, Vaishnav Seva, and Nama Ruchi, these are the teachings of Lord Chaitanya. And that's what he came himself to practice and taste. Right? So it's very consistent. So they're all three there. So it's not that they're not, because some will say, oh, it's not about the preaching, oh, that's just this. No, it's all three. Right? Otherwise, why is he creating the material world unless he's bringing living entities to himself? And then having come, then what are they going to do? The activities. And in that, they're going to taste love of God. Yes. Yeah, mercy to the living entities. That Vaishnav Seva means that service to the Vaishnavs. So that means generally one serving Vaishnavs that one will consider senior to yourself. But it also means any kind of interaction. So that, because Jiva Doya will be those who are junior. Right? Vaishnav Seva means those who are senior. And then in that, you're engaged in service, then you taste Krishna consciousness. See? As confirmed in Srimad Bhagavatam, the Bhagavad Gita, the Mahabharata, and the Upanishads, he is the Supreme Personality of Godhead, Krishna himself. And he is worshipable by everyone in this age of disagreement. Everyone can join in his Sankirtan movement. No previous qualification is necessary. Right? So it's not dependent upon you having some particular qualities or experience or knowledge. It means souls are qualified. So souls then can come to Krishna consciousness. Just by following his teachings, anyone can become a perfect human being. If a person is fortunate enough to be attracted by Lord Chaitanya, he is sure to be successful in his life's mission. In other words, those who are interested in attaining spiritual existence can easily be released from the clutches of Maya by the grace of Lord Chaitanya. The teachings presented in this book are non-different from the Lord. Right? The conditioned soul engrossed in the material body increases the pages of history by all kinds of material activities. Right? It increases the pages of history. Right? Just more stuff. The teachings of Lord Chaitanya can help the members of human society stop such unnecessary and temporary activities and can be elevated to the topmost platform of spiritual activities, which begin after liberation from material bondage. Such liberated activities in Krishna consciousness constitute the goal of human perfection. The false prestige one acquires by attempting to dominate material nature is illusory. Illuminating knowledge can be acquired by studying the teachings of Lord Chaitanya, and by such knowledge one can advance in spiritual existence.
Right.
Yes.
In this connection, Bhaktivinoda Thakur comments like, in order to read and understand like the teachings of Lord Chaitanya, you need not accept in the beginning that Chaitanya Mahaprabhu is Supreme Personality of Godhead.
Right.
Just go through his teachings. After going through, an intelligent person will conclude that he is the Supreme Personality of God.
Mm.
Because who else can give such a teaching, which is complete.
Yeah, so essential, so yes. Yeah, that's the, very nice. Yes. Yeah, so we see here, now we brought up all these other things, then it's a matter of, okay, attempting to dominate the material nature, attempting to enjoy it. Then we're bringing down to essential, because we'll take it, that's how we start, but that's the last part, that's the part that keeps us from Krishna, is that control and enjoy. So Prabhupada's bringing that up. No, everybody can, it doesn't matter what the background is and this and that and everything. Everyone has to suffer and enjoy the fruits of his activity. No one can check the laws of material nature that govern such things. You know, we may get together, decide it's going to be, it won't be. As long as one is engaged in fruit of activity, one is sure to be baffled in the attempt to attain the ultimate goal of life. I sincerely hope that by understanding the teachings of Lord Chaitanya presented in this book, Sri Chaitanya Charitamrita, human society will experience a new light of spiritual life, which will open the field of activity for the pure soul. Om Tat Sat, A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami, March 14th, 1968. The birthday of Lord Chaitanya, Sri Sri Radha Krishna Temple, New York, New York. Okay, then introduction. So it says, originally delivered as 5 morning lectures on the Chaitanya Charitamrita, the authoritative biography of Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu by Krishnadas Kaviraj Goswami, before the International Society for Krishna Consciousness in New York City, April 10th through 14th, 1967. Right, so when Prabhupada started, he started with Chaitanya Charitamrita. You know, you're picking up the lowest, so the only way you're going to catch him is by giving him the highest, right? So it's very interesting how Prabhupada approaches this and how he goes into this. And it means, that means you see how he's presenting, like we saw in the last time he presents, but here, he establishes things because people who aren't devotees could appreciate this, how he takes it through. So if we want to know how to preach, this is the method. Right? The word Chaitanya means living force. Yes.
So Lord Chaitanya came because only a devotee can give mercy, but only the Lord can give liberation?
Yes, yes, yes. Because that's the problem. Advaitacharya, he can't save anybody because he's given the rule that as you surrender, he'll reciprocate. No one's surrendering, just like nobody. So that means the only one that can catch people that aren't surrendering are devotees. And like you said, the only one then who can liberate the devotees is the Supreme Lord. So he has to call that form of the Lord that has come as a devotee. You know? And Lord, so therefore he comes, and that aspect is there. It says he comes because of he's called by Advaitacharya. But at the same time, he's also, since he's here, he's come to taste these three aspects himself. You know, about the attraction Radharani has for him, you know, her, devotional activities he does, and then the love she has for him. So those become the basis for the attraction that she has for him is the Sankirtan movement to attract living entities to Krishna. Right? So in other words, the preaching mission is simply assisting Radharani in her service of attraction to Krishna. And then that association with the devotees, the cultivating and all that, is how Radharani deals with the devotees. Right? And then her taste of love of God then is what we're following in the footsteps and, you know, trying to develop that taste for the holy name. So it's the same thing. There's not something different. Because sometimes people will put, oh, it's just the preaching, we don't care about the other things. And some, no, it's all about the taste, we don't care about the preaching. But Lord Chaitanya, it's about all, they're all Radharani. That's the beauty of it. So there's nothing that Lord Chaitanya is that's doing. Now and again, he'll just show things as Krishna. Like that, I forget who's, I think Kolibesha Sridhar, then as Varahadev, he picks up his water pot, right? Because there's always that pastime, because Lord Chaitanya is quite tall, right? Means the temple deities, that's life size. Prabhupada gave that size. And Krishna and Radha, they're life size. So you see, his Lord Chaitanya is very tall. So Bengalis aren't generally known as being overly tall. You know, it's not like, you know, Punjabis or something, you know, like that. So Lord Chaitanya would come and get Kolibesha Sridhar's water pot. Because he was so poor, it was iron. It wasn't, you know, copper or something else. It was just iron. But he'd want to drink from it. So he'd pick it up, and Kolibesha Sridhar would be trying to catch it. But because he's tall, he could hold it up, right? And because we have, you know, the tradition of drinking without touching your mouth, he can hold it way up there and pour and drink from it, and Kolibesha Sridhar can't get at it. So then it's very natural that then he'll show him the Varaha pastime where he picks up the earth and does all these things. You know. So, yes, so he has fun. The word Chaitanya means living force. Charita means character. And Amrita means immortal, right? So he's going to take Chaitanya Charitamrita and from different angles then describe, and just by describing the translation of Chaitanya Charitamrita, he'll show how you can preach to the karmis. As a living entities, we can move. But a table cannot because it does not possess living force. Right? Because when you go the soul, this, that, people go, oh, I don't, but if you say living force, who's going to complain? Scientists can't complain, atheists can't complain, nobody can complain. So the point is yeah, the table doesn't move because it doesn't have living force. Movement and activity may be considered signs or symptoms of the living force. Indeed, it may be said that there can be no activity without the living force. Right, so he just takes it through. It's there, it's seen that way. Indeed, you could even say that, and people will agree. So he's just very nicely taking it through. It doesn't have living force. It's seen that movement are considered, and activity are considered symptoms of living force. And it can be said that there's no activity without a living force. So he takes us through the logic of all three steps of the Sambandhavidaya and Prayojana and gets full agreement. Right? This is what's meant. This is, yes.
And all this, Pratyaksha, Anuman, and Shabda also.
Oh, yeah. That's yeah.
What's
like,
that?
Pratyaksha, Anuman, and Shabda. Right? Means it doesn't have living force. In movement and activity considered life, so that's something we can see. Like that. Indeed, it can be said there can be no activity without living force. Like that. So it starts with living. Living entities we can move, but a table cannot. So that's the authority.
That's the protection. You can
see that. Okay.
And the next one is Anuman. You can conduct it.
Okay, and then there can be no activity without living force. So just very nicely then takes that. Although, so that's what we're saying, is Prabhupada, he's giving very technical things, but in a very simple and easy accessible. So we may not even notice that. And this is just in the first opening. Like that. Although the living force is present in the material condition, this condition is not amrita, immortal. Right? Because people will agree with that. The words Chaitanya Charitamrita then can be translated as, quote, the character of the living force in immortality. But how is this living force displayed immortality? It is not displayed by man or any other creature in this material universe, for none of us are immortal in these bodies. Okay, so we're talking about this immortal, but at the same time we're not seeing anything immortal going on here. Right? We possess the living force. We perform activities. And we are immortal by our nature and constitution. But the material condition into which we have been put does not allow our immortality to be displayed. So he's already introduced that, and we're already considering about the immortal position, the living entities, and like this. It is stated in the Katha Upanishad that eternality and the living force belong to both ourselves and God. Although it is true that in both God and ourselves are immortal, there is a difference. As living entities, we perform many activities, but we have a tendency to fall down into material nature. God has no such tendency. Being all-powerful, he never comes under the control of material nature. Indeed, material nature is but one display of his inconceivable energies. Right. So he's already introduced about the life force, the consciousness, that this conscious, that life force is what the strings between what's living, what's not. Then this position of that this aspect has the aspect of immortality, and this immortality is there in the living entity and God. In God we see that immortality, in the living entity we don't, because of the consciousness and the context in which we're functioning in the material world. So God doesn't fall down in the material world, so therefore he's unaffected by it. We do. That's why we're affected. Okay. Lord Chaitanya should therefore not be considered one of us. Right? And we see he's very clean. He's not a slob. Right? He is Krishna himself, the supreme living entity. As such, he never comes under the cloud of Maya. Krishna, his expansions, and even his higher devotees never fall into the clutches of illusion. Right? So Krishna, his expansions, his Vishnu Tattva, then his energies, his internal potency, the devotees, they never fall into illusion. Why? Because they're always absorbed in Krishna. They never separate themselves from Krishna in consciousness. They're separate entities, so they're uniquely conscious. But they're using that consciousness in connection with Krishna. So they're engaged in the eternal. Right? If you're absorbed in Krishna, who's eternal, therefore then you are situated eternally on the eternal platform. Right? So they don't deviate from this because there's no taste. Right? We have an idea that there's a taste in the mundane. But it's only an idea. As Prahlad Maharaj says, Shruti Sukhat. It's heard about. We've heard that there's enjoyment. But actually, who's getting that enjoyment? Right? So that makes sense. Lord Chaitanya came to earth simply to preach Krishna Bhakti, love of Krishna. In other words, he is Lord Krishna himself, teaching the living entities the proper way to approach Krishna. He is like a teacher who, seeing a student doing poorly, takes up a pencil and writes, saying, do it like this, A, B, C. Right? So that's the thing is, we're not doing it properly, so you show them how to do it properly. Right? Because the material energy is already chastising and punishing. But no one's learning. So then Lord Chaitanya comes himself and shows, this is how you do it. And we see by his devotees and all that how it works. Because we're seeing we're seeing, you know, the example is given of Jagai Madhai. You're not going to get more sinful than Jagai Madhai. It's just not going to be possible. You know, they went out of their way. It's like they read through Manu and reading through all the rules. Oh, hey, this one we haven't broken yet. Then they'll go out and do it. Right? You know, you don't, where do you find people like this? Right? So, thinking, only a novelty, right? Yeah. So, Lord Chaitanya comes, and he then teaches personally, by his example, this is how you do it. This is how you overcome. And you see, Jagai Madhai following it, that they came to the platform of prema. So that's the point. And he personally takes involved. Because you say, oh, what? They're so sinful. But then, no, they're not. All that sin was taken by Lord Chaitanya. So they're not. So that's the position. Krishna, in the opening to the preface, Krishna personally takes care of the devotee, means he personally takes care. But the point is, he's taking care of us as the soul. And he takes care of the body and facilities as much as we're able to appreciate in context of Krishna. Okay? So that makes sense. So like that, then Krishna arranges these things. So he's taking care. So we're not under Maya's karma. We're under Krishna karma. So whatever happens, it's what will bring us closer to Krishna, what will make us give up the attachment to the material energy. So Krishna is doing that himself. And so he comes and shows, this is how you do it. Right? So that, yes.
Can you say that the parampara is to take care of
the parampara? Yes, because it's all. That's the thing. We're following the devotees, following the founder Acharya. And under the founder Acharya, then we're then serving all the previous Acharyas headed by Srila Rupa Goswami. Right? And then under that protection of Srup Damodar, serving Lord Chaitanya. So that's how it works, yes.
First, regarding founder Acharya, can we say, regarding founder Acharya, can we say that between Madhava Acharya and our Sampradaya and Srila Prabhupada, there were other founder Acharyas?
Yeah, every Sampradaya. Ramanuja for the Shri.
Our Sampradaya. Madhava Sampradaya, from Madhavacharya to Srila
Prabhupada. Well, Madhava is for those who are Vaikunthawalas within the Brahma line. But for those who are Brajwalas, then it's Srila Prabhupada. So within Lord Chaitanya's line, then that'll be Srila Prabhupada. But you'll be able to understand all the teachings of all the other Acharyas and founder Acharyas also through our founder Acharya. Bhaktivinoda Thakur gives the point that all the other Sampradayas will actually better understand their own philosophy by understanding Lord Chaitanya's. Because if you can appreciate a Chintabheda Bheda Tattva, you can appreciate the parts that are their philosophy. Because the philosophy is so perfect that you just have purified oneness, special oneness, you have oneness and you have difference. You know that there's difference. These are all just part of Achinta Bheda Bheda Tattva, inconceivably simultaneously one and different. And then you'll be able to appreciate the aspect of pure love. So even within their own line, they won't get distracted. It'll be about pure love. Because otherwise they tend to get distracted and it's about Surupiya Mukti or you know, one of these aspects of Mukti. When actually it's about prema. Right? So it will actually make their following their own practices go easier. And so that's by knowing the teachings of Lord Chaitanya, and we'll appreciate that through the founder Acharya. So Prabhupada's position is actually way beyond what generally is thought of. You know, his position, what he's teaching and all that is very, very unique. So, from this, one should not foolishly think that the teacher is learning his ABCs. Similarly, although Lord Chaitanya appears in the guise of a devotee, we should not foolishly think he is an ordinary human being. We should always remember that Lord Chaitanya is Krishna, God, himself, teaching us how to become Krishna conscious, and we must study him in that light. If we wish to become fully Krishna conscious, we have to give up the shackles of Maya. Or, if we remain within Maya, we should live in such a way we will not be subject to illusion. As did the many householders among Lord Chaitanya's closest devotees. Right? So Lord Chaitanya's devotees, so many of them were householders. So they were living in the environment that we would call Maya. But they were not an illusion because they connected everything to serving Lord Chaitanya. Right? That's the process. So it doesn't matter. It's just what is more comfortable for the living entity at their particular position in their life. So whichever ashram, whichever works best for them, that's what they use. So technically for the Lord it doesn't matter because it's all His energy anyway. Is that what I'm saying? Yeah. With His followers in the renounced order, however, Lord Chaitanya was very strict. He even banished Junior Haridas, an important kirtan leader, for glancing lustfully at a woman. The Lord told him, "You are living with me in the renounced order, and yet you are looking at a woman with lust." Other devotees of the Lord had appealed to him to forgive Haridas. But he replied, "All of you can forgive him and live with him. I shall live alone." On the other hand, when the Lord learned that the wife of one of His household devotees was pregnant, He asked that the baby be given a certain auspicious name, right? Because then you're always calling it by that name, and then you're always, one, it benefits the child, it benefits the parents, it benefits everybody. So while the Lord approved of householders having regulated sex, He was like a thunderbolt with those in the renounced order who tried to cheat by the method known as drinking water underwater while bathing on a fast day. In other words, He tolerated no hypocrisy amongst His followers. But you see, it's not that He didn't have that affection for Haridas, because you see, is that as a Gandharva, then He would sit there and listen to His kirtan every evening. He'd go down and sit alone, because He said, I'll you guys hang out with Him, I'll be alone. Right? But when He was alone, He was listening to Haridas. Right? So the whole point is the Lord is always taking care of everybody. But He's setting the example. Because otherwise, if you're not very strict, just like I was noticing, that it's like it with the brahmacharis in the ashram. Here's this one. So, you have, they have a locker, right? And the locker is about, a certain size. So they have to keep all their stuff in there. Of course, you can come along with 10 times as much stuff, but how much they use, because even they fill it up with stuff, they won't use it all. They'll use only about half of the locker. So the point is, if they get regulated to half a locker, then if they travel as a brahmachari, it'll be easy, like that. But if they get married, then it will get a little bit more. But not much more. But it'll get a little more. Okay? Like that. Because the point is if they have too much, where's all the wife stuff going to go? Right?
They get less.
Yeah, no, that's what I said. They get a little more, not much more. I don't know. This much stuff. That's everything. That's including the toothbrush, everything. So then like that. So the point is Lord Chaitanya, if He's very strict, then it won't expand so much. It'll be workable. So therefore, very strict on these things. So His pointing is that you have this aspect of the thunderbolt and rose. You have both of these elements. From the Chaitanya Charitamrita, we learn how Lord Chaitanya taught people to break the shackles of Maya and become immortal. Thus, as mentioned above, the title may be properly translated as, quote, "the character of the living force in immortality." Right, so what's the nature of it? What's the character of it? What was the previous one? Was the... The character of the living force in immortality. You see, is the difference. One is that it's just, you're just seeing the situation. Now you're seeing how they deal. Right? So that before was the Sambandha, this is the Abhideya one. The supreme living force is the supreme personality of Godhead. He is also the supreme entity. There are innumerable living entities, and all of them are individuals. This is very easy to understand. We are all individuals in our thoughts and desires, and the Supreme Lord is also an individual person. He is different, though, in that He is the leader, the one whom no one can excel. Among the minute living entities, one being can excel another in one capacity or another, like each of these living entities. The Lord is an individual, but he is different in that he is the supreme individual. Right? Means there's always hears that you're doing something, and there's always something better. You know, it's all like there's that saying that no matter how good you are, there's an Asian that's better. Like that. So, you know.
There is an Indian saying that if there is a person who can hit the top of a palm tree, there is another one who can hit on his head.
Who can hit?
On his head.
On hit that guy's head. Okay. Yes. So there's always more. Yeah. There's always more. But Krishna is the one who's beyond. No one's beyond him. Okay. Thus, we should not think that Krishna is overpowered by the material potency when he is in the material world. Neither Krishna nor his incarnations ever come under the control of material nature. They are totally free. Indeed, in Srimad Bhagavatam, one who has a godly nature is actually defined as one who is not affected by the modes of material nature, although in material nature. Even if a devotee can attain this freedom, then what to speak of the Supreme Lord? So if the devotee can attain the freedom by not being affected by material energy, what to speak of the Lord, who is the Supreme Personality? The real question is, how can we remain unpolluted by material contamination while in the material world? Srila Rupa Goswami explains that we can remain uncontaminated while in the world. We simply make it our ambition to serve Krishna. One may then justifiably ask, how can I serve? It is not simply a matter of meditation, which is just an activity of the mind, but of performing practical work for Krishna. Rec is this body, mind, and words, everything. In such work, we should leave no resource unused. It means we'll use all resources. So this idea that Yukta Vairagya simply means using modern technological things, no, Yukta Vairagya means using everything. Modern technology just happens to be part of that. Whatever is there, whatever we have, we should be used for Krishna. We can use everything, typewriters, automobiles, airplanes, missiles. We simply speak to people about Krishna consciousness. We are also rendering service. If our mind, senses, speech, money, and energies are thus engaged in the service of Krishna, then we are no longer in material nature. By virtue of spiritual consciousness or Krishna consciousness, we transform the platform of material nature. Right? So it's everything can be used. Right? So typewriters, automobiles, airplanes, okay, but he also mentions missiles. Now, who is he talking to in 67? Right? Like that. So they can also be used. You know, but but it still has to be something that's connected to Krishna. Right? So it's not the missile that's important, it's its connection to Krishna that's important. If our mind, senses, speech, money, and energies are thus engaged in the service of Krishna, then we are no longer in material nature. By virtue of spiritual consciousness or Krishna consciousness, we transform the platform of material nature. The Mayavadis, who hold the view that the Absolute is impersonal and formless, contend that a realized soul has no need to talk. And which is good, if they would stop, they would follow their own advice. Right? But the Vaishnavas, devotees of Krishna, contend that when one reaches the stage of realization, he really begins to talk. Right? Because before that, one may be talking so many things, but now when you realize about Krishna consciousness, now you're talking about Krishna. Right? So, yeah. Quote, previously we only talked of nonsense, the Vaishnava says. Now let us begin our real talks of Krishna. Indeed, when a devotee realizes how much he has to say about Krishna, 24 hours in a day are not sufficient. It is the fool who is celebrated as long as he does not speak. For when he breaks his silence, his lack of knowledge is exposed. The Chaitanya Charitamrita shows that there are many wonderful things to discover by glorifying the Supreme. In the beginning of the Chaitanya Charitamrita, Krishnas Kaviraj Goswami writes, quote, I offer my respects to my spiritual masters. He uses the plural here to indicate the disciplic succession. He offers obeisances not to his spiritual master alone, but to the whole parampara, the chain of disciplic succession, beginning with Lord Krishna himself. Thus, the author addresses the guru in the plural to show the highest respect for all his predecessor spiritual masters. After offering obeisances to the disciplic succession, the author pays obeisances to all other devotees, to the Lord himself, to his incarnations, to the expansions of Godhead, and to the manifestations of Krishna's internal energy. Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, sometimes called Krishna Chaitanya, is the embodiment of all these. He is God, Guru, devotee, incarnation, internal energy, and expansion of God. As his associate, Nityananda, he is the first expansion of God. As Advaita, he is an incarnation. As Garadhar, he is the internal potency. As Srivas, he is the marginal entity in the role of a devotee. Thus, Krishna should not be thought of as being alone, but should be considered as eternally existing with all his manifestations. Right? Because when you see Krishna alone, then you're dealing with Paramatma. Because Krishna Bhagavan means he's always with his devotees, expansions, his energies, everything. No such thing as alone. Right? Okay. Thus, Krishna should not be thought of as alone, but should be considered as eternally existing with all his manifestations, as described by Ramanujacharya. In the Vishishta Dvaita philosophy, God's energies, expansions, and incarnations are considered to be oneness in diversity. In other words, God is not separate from all these. Everything together is God. Right? So, you understand? So he's bringing this out that is there as part of our philosophy. But many people pick up devotional service. Right? Those who didn't, then Madhvacharya went out because they're still thinking he's talking oneness and said, no, there's two.
Yeah. This very much helps one to understand how Brahman with qualities, that is actually real Brahman, which is Bhagavan.
Yes.
And Brahman is just when you don't perceive him with, when you see him alone without his...
Yes, when you see him alone. Because otherwise, you always talk about Parabrahman. The devotees, they see Krishna in something, in the pillar, and then they're seeing Bhagavan. Does that make sense? That's just how it works. It's just immediate. Okay. You know, otherwise, we learn about it, then intellectually we go through the stages. But for the devotees, it's just automatic. That's why in anything they can see Krishna.
Okay. Om Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare.
Jai Srila Prabhupada ki, Samaveta Bhaktivinoda ki, Jai Nitai Gaura Premanandini.